Good morning, everyone. Happy Sunday, and welcome to SASS, the screen, air, and stage show every Sunday at 10 a.m. I'm Nick Angus.
And I'm Hannah Schauder. Welcome to the show. It's very lovely to have you here so early in the morning.
We hope you're up and we hope you're listening. But if not, remember that we will tell you how you can reach this show as a podcast later in the episode. We're really, really happy with how much audience and how much listeners we're getting on our podcast. We're really, really excited, and we can see those numbers going up daily. So we're really, really grateful to all you out there. But enough of that. On with the show. And what is our theme for today, Hannah?
Crime and mystery.
Ooh, we're kind of continuing this, you know, dark theme. Last week, we looked at the horror genre, if you missed our episode. And this week, we're continuing that with our crime and mystery. But we've got a little bit of a different take on it. A few little points to raise. And obviously, new pieces of entertainment to look at and delve into. But before that, as always, as part of our new season, it's time for the review preview.
And we've got a
special review this week because Hannah and I actually both went to see this.
That's right. We both saw the same thing.
Whoa, what?
Exciting.
This was really, really good. We went to see Heathers, the musical by G Productions. It was at St. Martin's Theatre in
South Yarra.
Thank you. I had a literal mental blank just then. And it was really, really good. I walked out of it and I loved it. It was quite long, but I really enjoyed it. What were your thoughts, Ada?
I also really liked it. I think these kinds of musicals really give you an appreciation for amateur theatre productions and, you know, and amateur companies where they can really pull off the big musicals.
Yes, yes.
It's also a cheaper lifestyle, so.
No, it's
much
really,
cheaper, but.
And it's nice to have this potential for us as well, because, you know, going to the big theatres is fantastic, but it does cost money to get those good seats, whereas this is, not only is it more intimate, but it is more affordable, and it is really, really quality work.
And the people that are in it have so much talent.
Yeah.
It's sort of like supporting local business.
It's fantastic.
It's local talent. So as for the storyline, I'd never seen Heathers before. Nick, I believe you'd seen the movie of Heathers.
I had. So, the movie, which was released back in the 1980s. And it's a very strange film. It follows an interesting plot line, and I was really skeptical about how the musical would follow. For those out there who don't know the plot, I'll give a quick synopsis. So, welcome to Westerberg High School, ruled by the cruelest girls in all of Ohio, the Heathers. When Veronica Sawyer finds her way into this powerful clique, things start to look beautiful. But before she can settle into popularity, Veronica falls in love with a strange and mysterious new guy in town, JD, and is kicked out of the group by Heather Chandler, the Almighty. To save herself from becoming an ex-somebody, Veronica must bite the bullet and kiss Heather's aerobicized ass. However, JD has another plan for that bullet, and that synopsis was actually read from the program in which for the musical we saw the other day, which I thought was actually really well written.
I think it was also very well written, and look, it's a great storyline. It's got very Mean Girls vibes to it. I think one day we'll delve further into it and sort of draw those parallels. I think, look, I'm not going to lie, I think I was kind of shooketh at some points during the musical.
I thought the movie, the original film, was very, you know, for its time, it was very, you know, prominent, and it was very strange. Not strange, but just so different in the themes that were expressed. So I was, as I said, very unsure. In the musical, it didn't hide them in any way.
Absolutely. And I think that is another thing to say about local theatre, which is, you know, they're not afraid to be a bit more provocative, a little bit more, controversial. Mm. And so there were some graphic scenes. You know, there was murder and there was a sex scene on stage, which was a first for me.
Yeah, I know.
I think apart from Rocky Horror Show, of course. But I found it really impressive that they were able to pull off these really, almost gruesome scenes on stage.
Yeah.
With absolutely no shame. So, and I actually appreciated the musical for that, that they weren't afraid to go, you know, to push the boundaries a little bit and see how far the audience could go.
I think it's great. I think it's great because you don't really see that happening with our bigger musicals and bigger theatre productions.
It's very safe.
Yeah, yeah. I think they tend to take the risks and push the boundaries in regards to their set and their set changes and their costumes. That's how they really choose to wow the audiences and through everything else. But I think, for our smaller theatre productions, it's really great to see them take these risks because they do pay off. They
Absolutely.
Really do pay off. And, I think they really succeeded in these, you know, these areas in which
Definitely.
They focused on.
I will give absolute major kudos to the lead. She carried it so well. I was a little bit sceptical at first, but she had a really good voice. She was on, I think, for most of the most of the play, which is really exhausting for a lead character. But she did not waver at all, and you really did walk out feeling like you'd progress with the other characters.
Yes.
Absolutely. So, I think we give it a good 5 stars for that.
I think a 5 stars. And it's interesting, just on an end note, it's interesting that Heathers is being picked up by a lot of schools and university and also small theatre companies to do as a musical. And I think the main reason is because it follows, you know, this high school storyline. But it's also, a lot of the songs are really, really, you know, they're fun, they're vibrant. It's a colourful, eccentric musical. And it's interesting to see it just become so more popular these days.
Absolutely. And it has been picked up by Netflix to come out as a TV show.
It has.
Will be interesting for us to cover that at some point. I'm sceptical.
Yeah, it'll be interesting.
It was such of a musical. And I don't, you know, I can understand how the storyline could be broken up into episodes, but not for a long-running TV show.
Yeah.
Maybe a mini-series.
Yes.
But I'm not sure. We'll have to see when it comes out. But until then, welcome to the show. We're going to take a quick music break, and we'll be right back. And welcome back to SASS right here on Sin 90.7 every Sunday morning at 10 a.m.
It is the Screen Air and Stage Show. We just had a little bit of a giggle, but we are back with our episode 16. We are already at episode 16. Our first episode contained 12 episodes, and we are already up to episode 4 of season 2. It is going very quickly.
It's been a lot of fun.
It has been, but we are loving every episode. We're loving being able to share our thoughts and opinions with you each week. And if you have thoughts and opinions to share, please go via our Twitter page. We would love to get, you know, anything you may have, any ideas, any questions, please send them through. It is SASS_show. But if that's too hard, please send us a direct message if you know us personally or on our Facebook page. Do a post. Any way you can get in touch, please, we want to know what you're thinking about our genre today, which is the crime and thriller.
So we are on to our first segment, which is Screen. And we're going to be talking about the Murder on the Orient Express, which is a drama mystery movie that was released in 2017. I'm going to give a very quick synopsis. A lavish trip through Europe quickly unfolds into a race against time to solve a murder aboard a train. When an avalanche stops the Orient Express dead in its tracks, the world's greatest detective,
Hercule Poirot,
French for you. Poirot arrives to interrogate all passengers and search for clues before the killer can strike again. So, this is interesting. I watched this movie on a flight to Hong Kong. I don't think I actually would have watched it otherwise.
Yeah.
It was a good airplane movie. So, if you want a bit more of a simple plot, you know, detectives on the train, there's a whole lot of passengers on the train, somebody dies on the train, he's got to interview all the people on the train, work out who killed the guy on the train. That's that.
And it's good. It's your hardcore mystery that you crave and that you love. It's, you know, it's Agatha Christie. The original book, Murder on the Orient Express, was written by Agatha Christie.
Right.
And who doesn't love Agatha Christie? She's a legend, and she wrote so many fantastic novels that, yes, they've just adopted this uniqueness to them. And they're stories that, although they seem like they could get old, they really don't. Although, I'm going to bring up this reboot idea. This was actually a film also in 1974.
Really?
So this, you could say the 2017 was a reboot. We're just going to leave that at that because we know we bring up the reboot so much. We love it, but we really want to focus on some new angles today. One angle that I was interested to look at was, I think with these thriller and these crime genres, there is this big tendency to either have full belief or almost complete disbelief in what you're seeing. When you fully believe in something, that helps for you, for the end result and the end climax to be really almost comparable to reality. And it really shocks our senses and makes us question, you know, how it compares so similarly to reality. On the other hand, when something is so unbelievably shocking, it makes us question reality even more and say, well, what could exist in reality? So for this one, where do you think it falls along the line of, for the 2017 reboot, where do you think it falls along the line of full belief and full disbelief? When you saw it, could you invest and believe in the story fully? Or were there things that kind of jarred your outlook?
I think it's a bit tricky because when we go to watch a movie, we sort of have that idea already embedded that this is a movie.
Yeah.
This isn't real.
Yes.
And, you know, have there been murders on a train? I'm sure.
Mm. Yeah.
I'm sure there have been murders on a train, but this is much more sensationalized of this is a murder on a train and everybody's responsible. Mm. And there's a lot more people as well, which is, this was set, I think, this was set in the 1930s, bear in mind. So it was really only the upper class could actually take these speed trains in Europe, as in Europe. You know, in comparison to today, everybody's taking the speed trains through Europe.
Yeah.
And so if there was a murder, well, okay, everybody on the train would be questioned, but not investigated. This was much more different because everybody on the train, you know, was really involved because they were on this train for a few days.
Yes.
So, look, I think it's realistic in the sense that there are murders, there are, you know, we got to investigate them, but I can't say I, you know, appreciated the movie for its realism.
Realism, yes.
So,
do you think that's an issue when it comes to, because I think it specifically is for this genre of crime and thriller. I think it applies to other genres as well, but specifically for this one where you've got this story that you really want to invest in. Do you think that kind of bordering on not being completely realistic was a problem, or did it not? Did you still kind of emotionally connect to it and everything that you normally want to do in a film?
I think I was still able to connect to it. Mm-hmm. I'm a real sucker for multiple storylines and intense character development.
Yes.
So I loved that I got to actually find out the backstory for all of the characters, the detective himself, watch them come together somehow. And I appreciated it for that, for that, you know, that movie making technique rather than, you know, oh, okay, it's a murder. I love me a good murder, because I don't love me a good murder.
No. And you see these days there's so many TV series films that cover this idea. And I think it's one of the most complex genres to be able to make it unique, because to document a murder, it, you know, that's your basis. And how do you make it unique? How do you make it different?
And how do you make it interesting?
Yeah, all at the same time.
That's right. This particular murder on the train was quite interesting because it also connected to a previous murder years before that time.
Yes.
So it's sort of all, it all sort of, it's a bit of a jigsaw puzzle in that sense. Now, Nick, bone to pick. Apparently, you've got some beef with this movie.
Look, I'll actually pick up a point you just said, a jigsaw puzzle. I love this film, but I felt like there were a lot of pieces missing of the jigsaw.
Oh.
I feel like it's, you build that, you make that jigsaw puzzle at home on your dining room table, and then you get really annoyed because there's all these pieces missing when they could have easily put them in the box. And I think the cause of this was just the overload of big names. They thought with this film that getting the big names would get people into the cinema, and that was true. But what that caused is it caused for the storyline to just be second best. It was about the stars. It was about Johnny Depp. It was about Michelle Pfeiffer. It was about Daisy Ridley. It was about Kenneth Branagh, who played Hercule Poirot. It was about all these characters and, yes, their storyline, but it just kind of neglected the actual drama of it, which was this murder.
Mm.
It became caught up in, you know, doing these fantastical, you know, insights into these characters. I think it just lost its touch. And I think this can also be relayed by the runtime. It is a shorter runtime than the previous one, which was made in 1974. And for a mystery, although it can drag, I think, you know, you want a big runtime to bring out every little piece of detail. Now, I haven't personally read the book, so I'm not sure whether the disparities in what was left out does actually correlate to the book. But I kind of just walked out and I felt like the ending just kind of came out of nowhere. And it just, it really appeared from just this bubble of, you know, all these characters. And I think I love the ending, I must say. The ending was really, really awesome. And I walked out of it being like, oh, didn't expect that. But at the same time, I was like, yeah, but where did it come from? I felt like it was just a film that really had a focus just on getting all these big names in. And it, yeah, it just let the plot to be a little bit second best. In saying that, though, to end on a positive note, the cinematography in it, the soundtrack, and the locations they go to are phenomenal.
Yes,
It's a beautiful film to watch.
Really, like, some great tracking shots, really beautifully done. I really love the colour palette as well, which is a bit weird for a musical, but because it was set in the 1930s and people were dressed more elegantly, and also the train itself was very elegant, it was a really aesthetically pleasing setting to have for a murder.
I love watching English mysteries and, like, you know, your kind of your 1930s to 1950s English mysteries, because, you know, the costumes, the setting, they're absolutely fantastic.
Absolutely. It is interesting what you said, though, with the plot, you know, with, I agree, I really loved the ending. I thought it was a beautiful way to end the movie, but you know, it does bring up those questions of, was it a bit of a quick attempt just to get it all together and, okay, here's your movie, rather than trying to go more in depth.
Yeah.
It is interesting because the big names also did get me in. I mean, I see a Johnny Depp and I'm like, it's time to go. Though, I will make a quick mention that a lot of the recent Johnny Depp movies actually aren't doing well.
Yeah,
it seems like maybe he's turned into a bit of a poison for movies
and
at the moment.
And that really, like, bums. That really bums me because I think these actors are fantastic. I'm not saying they're not great, but it's just we don't need to overuse them and also put them all together. Let specific actors shine in their own roles and introduce new ones. I'm such a big provoker or a big advocate for, you know, upcoming stars. You know, let these new upcoming stars have the lead roles and just watch them shine and introduce them to society. And, yeah, have all these other supporting roles. That's fantastic. But just make a balance. I think it's all about balance. And I think this one was just overloaded with amazing talent that it just...
It sort of forgot.
You forgot about what was happening. So then when the end came, you were just like, oh, yeah, we're in a train on a... there's a murder happening. You kind of just forgot that.
Right. I think probably the only issue I had with it, and I will say this without giving spoilers, is that the film attempts to justify vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and if you go and watch the movie or if you have seen the movie, you'll sort of understand what I'm getting at. But... I think it comes down to a morality issue. There's a great quote in the movie, sometimes the law of man is not enough.
Mm.
And I really like that line of just sometimes we've got to go beyond morality and justice and see why these bad things happen.
Yes.
So, look, I think overall I really enjoyed the movie. Yeah. I think it is worth watching if you love a good murder mystery.
And if you love Agatha Christie. And I think she does really well at portraying stories that are believable in a sense. I think this adaptation did, you know, have some issues in coming off as believable, as we discussed before. But I think overall it is a great film. I would definitely go see it for its amazing cinematography. And if you love a bit of, you know, high talent up there, because there are plenty of big names in this movie. But for now, we will be back after this song break. That was Love Shack by the Glee Cast. You're on Sin 90.7 with Sass, the Screen and Stage Show. I'm Nick Angus.
And I'm Hannah Schauder. Welcome back. We're talking about crime and mystery. We just spoke about Murder on the Orient Express, and we were able to continue the discussion off air with our spoilers.
we were actually having a really in-depth discussion.
Which was much needed, which is good. But now we're on to our air segment, which is TV shows. And we've actually got a couple because we could not decide.
Yeah.
So Nick's got one, I've got one. Mm-hmm. Nick, start us off.
Take us away. So first, we're going to be looking at Criminal Minds. Now, this has been a huge success, this TV series. It has reached a monumental amount of seasons, and it is continuing with its popularity and success today. And the thing I would love to look at this with this TV series is how it goes to one end of the spectrum in this belief-disbelief spectrum in being quite unbelievable. So we're going to discuss that. However, before we get there, I'll just give you a quick synopsis for those out there who don't know what I'm talking about. So, Criminal Minds covers an elite squad of FBI profilers as they analyse the country's most twisted criminal minds, anticipating the perpetrator's next moves before they can strike again. Each member of the Mindhunter team brings his or her expertise to pinpoint predators' motivations and identify emotional triggers to stop them. The core group includes an official profiler who is highly skilled at getting into the minds of criminals, a quirky genius, the former media liaison who manages to adeptly balance family life and the job, and a computer wizard. So it's a little bit of, your squad that's on the case, your FBI squad.
Squad.
And I must say that each of the characters or each of the people part of this squad in the TV series are quirky. They have their originality and they've stayed throughout the whole, you know, how many seasons there are now, which is fantastic. They've really, really made their name within this TV series. But anyway, back to the point I was bringing before. One thing we look at this, when we look at this TV series, we say, why is this so popular? And I think it's because it's part of this spectrum idea is that being a crime and mystery thriller, we either crave full disbelief or full belief. And this one, I feel like it really evokes sentiments of full disbelief in that the crimes committed and the things that this FBI team are investigating are quite absurd. There's one episode where there's this shadow monster, and I think there's this drug that is put through the ventilation system of different houses. And what it does is it causes these people to hallucinate and see the shadow monster chasing after them. That's just an example of one episode. And that actually led into
it. It's
very peculiar. Some of them are quite believable. You know, you do just have your normal murder, but some of them, they do really border on this disbelief. And I think this is why it has become so popular. It's because it really challenges us as viewers to kind of question, well, what is truth and what is falsity in our day-to-day life?
Mm.
And it also just evokes these cases in a really, really intense and, you know, tense way that really reels every audience member in and watches with really deep engagement and just highly anticipates what is to come next.
Mm.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I was just looking at Criminal Minds just now. There's been 303 episodes.
Just, you know, just your casual.
Just your casual miniseries. That is absolutely insane.
Yeah.
And do you think that the show, do you think you'd like the show more if it was more realistic?
Well, it's interesting because I think we were saying before, there's a lot of TV series these days that do have that realism. Yeah, you could say that realism flavour to them. You've got, you know, your NCIS. You've got your Hawaii Five-O, just to name a few. I love that music. But so I think what Criminal Minds does well is it just kind of neglects the stereotypical conventions that make, you know, your day-to-day mystery crime TV series, in that there's a crime, they solve it, and then they go out for, you know, drinks at a pub to end the TV series, as they always do. So I think this one's good is that not only does it follow a different kind of angle in focusing on really absurd crimes, but it just kind of has this essence of originality and, yeah, just heightened suspense. It could even be classified as a horror TV series. I don't think I would put it quite there because I think it still has...
maybe even more thriller.
Thriller, yeah. I think it's... why it succeeds is because it has this really unique angle in how it is portrayed and the characters that are represented in it.
Mmm, very nice.
Yeah. So it is on, I think it currently airs on Channel 7.
Yeah.
And they do switch between doing current episodes as well as old episodes. And it's so funny to watch, you know, the comparison between the two and who stayed around. Most of them have stayed around, but how they've aged, how they've changed.
Very much like SVU.
Yeah,
SVU. You know, where you've had like some of the exact same actors the entire time, and
I know.
Since, you know, like it's been on like over a decade,
yeah.
Something ridiculous like that. Very nice. So now we're going to move on to my TV show, mm-hmm. which is Sherlock. It's one of my favorite TV shows. I've been really looking forward to talking about it. It is, it's a BBC TV show, and it's a British crime television series based on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, that's right, that's the full name, mm-hmm. Sherlock Holmes detective stories. So it is a British, it's based on the book, and it's created by Stephen Moffat and Mark Gatiss, and it stars Benedict Cumberbatch as Sherlock Holmes and Martin Freeman as Dr. John Watson, mm-hmm. and it pretty much follows the stories and investigations of Sherlock Holmes. As he says, he's not a psychopath, he's a high-functioning sociopath, mm-hmm. and he is a brilliant detective who you could argue has accessed more than 10% of his brain and is able to read people just like that and mm-hmm. figure out things. So it's following him and not only how he solves mysteries and crimes and everything, but how he functions as a person as well. He's very different and he's definitely not your normal detective. I absolutely love this show. It's a very different kind of detective series because there's only about three episodes in each season. There's four seasons and each episode is an hour and a half long. It's pretty much a movie series in that sense.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's so, really interesting. That's a really interesting take and perspective on the TV series.
Definitely. Definitely. And there have been movies based on the book. You know, let's not forget that shocking one with
Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah, that's right. Absolutely. I could not.
Bit of sass there your Sunday morning.
Bit of sass. Love Robert Downey Jr. He will always be my Iron Man, but
not my Sherlock.
So, but yeah, it is very interesting because a lot of these stories could have been broken up into 40-minute episodes, but instead they really get you invested in an hour and a half long episodes. I think the show is really brilliant with the way it tackles some of the crimes in the book and the villains that they portray, but also keeping it, you know, bringing it back to that sort of realism, keeping it very everyday life as well.
Yeah.
There are lots of storylines where you're just watching Sherlock as a person and John Watson as a person as well. You know, he gets married at some point. It's very, and you know, and the landlord that they live with, the old lady, it's all very, you know, it's all these big supernatural sort of mysteries, but it's set in the everyday life. And you forget that, you know, they're just humans trying to solve. Another interesting thing is it's set in London, mm-hmm. of course. So you've also got those kinds of big imposing threats on the city.
Yes.
As well, which is also very like, it's not just...
To relate to the story and to kind of intertwine with the story, which is
nice. It's not just, you know, one person's going to suffer. It's an entire city's going to suffer if this villain prevails. So it's very interesting how they sort of bring it back to that.
Yeah.
To those sort of realistic ideas. Mm. But I think it's absolutely fantastic.
A bit of a question. If we compare it to Criminal Minds, we'll do a bit of a comparison. Do you think it's harder for the everyday producer and director to make a film that is realistic but heighten it in a way that makes it really popular? So make it realistic but really heighten it, or make something that's completely absurd? Which do you think is harder to really, really excel at doing and make it popular for audiences? Something that is realistic and but really heightened to a new level, or something that's really absurd? Because I think you were saying before, Sherlock, what it does is it has this realism effect to it, but it does it in a way that's really, really, you know, nice and heightened, and which has made it so popular. But then you've got Criminal Minds, which is so absurd.
It's a bit trickier. I think it depends on what people want. I really like that Sherlock has that realistic element because you feel like you can relate to the characters on a more personal level.
Yeah.
But a lot of the things that you see, you know, with the way that, you know, Sherlock thinks is, you know, it's a bit more fake. You could argue it is a little bit absurd because what detective really thinks that quickly and that well? But I still think it's better if you can relate to the characters on a more realistic level. There are some shows where it's really ridiculous and you're a little bit like, ugh, okay, whatever. But I mean, there are, you know, it is still, it's a genre in itself that people really enjoy. I mean, that's why there are so many knockoffs of SVU when you've got all those different criminal shows, because people like those really intense, fictionalized crime stories, because it satisfies their need for a crime without it actually happening, which I think is what we want as well. Yes. I will quickly mention that another reason why Sherlock is so popular and has, you know, 9.2 out of 10 on IMDb and 83% on Rotten Tomatoes is Benedict Cumberbatch himself. He is my bae. He is a babe, and he totally, totally nails.
He nails these really quirky characters. He's played Sherlock, Alan Turing in
The Imitation Game,
and then Doctor Strange.
Absolutely.
He really nails these really, kind of in-depth, smart, charismatic, but also slightly quirky characters.
That's right. And you sort of learn to hate him a little bit, but also love him.
Yeah.
And especially when you see all the other characters interacting with him who are, you know, so-called normal. John Watson is a very normal guy, almost a bit bland. But he really balances out Sherlock's eccentric nature.
Yes.
I think it's very interesting. So, look, I think it's difficult to say which version is better. Some people like the supernatural, some people would prefer
the reality.
The reality. I mean, if you want a more realistic thing, you know, go watch the news. But
advice from Hannah.
That's right. That's my little tidbit for the day. But I think if you are looking for a TV show to get sucked into, absolutely watch the Sherlock series. I binge watched the entire fourth season in one day. That was a really intense 4.5 hours of viewing. And they also do I will mention quickly that they have done Christmas specials that take place in like 1900s Victoria. So from that point of view, they also explore there's more supernatural. There was an episode that had to do with like a ghost or a demon. So I think they still touch on it. I think maybe the two genres complement each other.
So maybe it's a balance between finding a little bit of belief, a little bit of disbelief. Because I think you could even say that with Criminal Minds is that the team and the FBI and the locations, they're believable, but the stories are a little bit unbelievable. Whereas here you kind of get a balance between the actual content in each episode.
Absolutely. But with that, we're going to go to another music break and we'll be right back. That was After Gold by Big Wild. You're listening to SASS every Sunday morning on Sin 90.7. We're talking about crime and mystery, but also within that, the belief and disbelief of what we see on our screens.
Ooh!
So for our musical or our stage segment, we are talking about the musical Chicago, which I hadn't actually, I was a little bit skeptical, not going to lie. I was a little bit skeptical at first.
Yes.
But this is a fantastic musical and it's got a great storyline. So I think it actually is worth talking about. For a quick synopsis for you.
Before we do the synopsis, we'll just say this one does hinder a little bit more on the crime, let's say. I don't think it really delves into the mystery, but we thought that for today we would put the two together because I think in our previous entertainment pieces, they have covered both topics or both genres. You could say Chicago really made you just looks at crime. Crime through music, but it doesn't really contain, it has, look, you could say has a little bit of mystery underlying it, but it really majorly focuses on the crime.
Absolutely. So this story is a satire on corruption in the administration of criminal justice and the concept of the celebrity criminal. It is set in Chicago.
Oh, really? It's set in Chicago. What?
I mean, is it?
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
I mean, I don't, could you imagine?
Rhetorical like, question out of 10.
It's called Chicago, but it's set in Washington. Who knows? Set in Delaware. It is in mid-1920s in Chicago. And we are looking at Roxy Hart, who murders her lover, nightclub regular Fred Casely. And she is convicted and put in an all-women jail. With Velma Kelly, who used to be a famous sort of, what are they called? The, like those showgirls that perform at all the clubs.
A showgirl?
Yeah, I guess
I've
so.
Got, I think I know what you're saying. I think I'll have to have a think about
that.
We'll
come
back to
that.
She
is a showgirl. And,
yes.
And it's pretty much about how she sort of tricks the justice system into believing that she's innocent and didn't actually murder her lover. So I could definitely delve into it more, but it's a pretty layered musical. You're looking at actually multiple characters, not just Roxy. And unfortunately, neither Nick and I have seen the actual musical. Come on. Come on, Melbourne. Get it here. Because it would be such an amazing musical itself. But we have seen the movie, which still keeps that sort of musical flair.
Yes, yes.
It is. So before we get onto it, in case you didn't know, it's actually based on real criminals.
Yeah.
It's
And how do you think that, we will delve into it, but just initially, when you think about that, when you hear that something's loosely based or based off something, based off a true life, in this circumstance, crime, how does that adapt and impact your belief system? Does that automatically make you walk into something thinking this is going to impact me more? Sorry, I know I'm bringing it back to this spectrum idea, but I think it's really interesting with crime and mystery because I think it really impacts us in a really unique way. So when you go watch this, we'll say the film in this circumstance, when you go watch this film, did you kind of feel like I've got this new kind of appreciation for it almost because it's based on a true story? How did you go into it?
Absolutely. I think with most things that we watch nowadays, when you hear that it's based on a true story, it definitely changes your perspective.
Yeah.
It can give you more respect, can leave you a bit more shocked that such a thing existed. We've spoken about lots of movies and all those sorts of things that are based on true stories and true people as well, certain events that occurred where you actually can't believe that they existed in real life.
Yeah, I know.
And I only found out, you know, today really, that this musical is actually based on real criminals. And I had that moment of, oh, that's a little bit,
it makes it kind of
unsettling.
It is very unsettling. It's almost, it makes you a little bit uncomfortable and think, oh. But I think it also draws us in more and draws us into this storyline, which is, and it's so complex, this storyline as it stands. So it's kind of almost, It's interesting to kind of adapt your belief to, you know, believe in this storyline because there's so many complex characters and happenings that surround the storyline that make you go, wow. And look, I think entertainment pieces, they do tend to sometimes extend the storyline beyond what was believable if it is based off a true story. But I think even as it stands, it's still interesting to kind of watch this and just see the complexities that surround it and just go, wow, this is based off something real.
Definitely. So this musical is based on a couple of real criminals. So Roxy Hart was based on Sabella Nitti, who in the early 1920s was on trial for the murder of her missing husband. There was actually no evidence, motive, and proof that it was actually her husband who had died, but she was still convicted for the murder. Mm. And Velma Kelly was inspired by a former showgirl turned gunwoman. which is also, you know, it's actually her character. She was a showgirl turned gunwoman. In the movie, she kills her sister. I'm not sure who she kills in real life. And then there's also a character, the innocent Hungarian ballerina, which is the woman who doesn't know any English. And she was inspired by an Italian... I actually got it wrong. The actual ballerina who was convicted of murder, even though she was innocent, was based on Sabella Nitti.
Okay. Yes, that's right.
Who was convicted even though there was no evidence.
Yes.
But Roxy Hart was a version of the Auburn beauty who shot her secret boyfriend while her husband was at work, which is... So I think they definitely keep it true to the original storyline. I was saying to Nick before that this movie, well, musical, it actually suits the whole realism and surrealism dynamic really well, because you jump between two sort of separate storylines. You've got what's actually happening in the movie or real life, and then you've got... Then you jump to Roxy Hart's fantasies and what she's imagining. She has this dream of being a showgirl.
Yes.
And sort of imagines everything that's happening almost as a song or a performance being performed for a big audience.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's very interesting in that it kind of finds balance once again between the surreal and the real. And I think this is something that's made it quite successful. It, you know, not only is it its catchy songs, it's, you know, burlesque almost inspiration to it. But I think this balance between that. Something else I think it's really interesting to look at is that it has been such a successful musical. In 1976, it was nominated for 11 Tony Awards, but it actually didn't win any of these.
It actually did win one.
My apologies.
The Outstanding Lighting Design, which is...
It's interesting. It's a fantastic award, but it's interesting to see, do you think that the crime undertones this, or even the real life undertones this, do you think that's made it something that wasn't in the running for the prize? Do you think that stopped it, or do you think it was just something
was
better?
It might have just been popularity. And I think also, 1976, it was still a relatively new musical. I think if it was to go up against... you know, in an award show today, I think it would definitely take on more awards.
Chorus Line won Best Musical.
Won Best Musical.
Yeah, in 1976.
So it's difficult. There were lots of good musicals coming out at the same time that just so happened to beat it. And I think also sometimes it can be difficult to portray the story you want on stage. Keep in mind, it's actually amazing when a musical can come together. There are so many things that can go wrong. An actor messing up a line or losing their voice or a set falling down. There's so many things that can go wrong. And the musical of the movie makes it really flawless, of course, because it's able to jump between those two fantasy worlds perfectly. Mm. But in the musical, it might be a little bit different because you've got to have both worlds almost set up at the same time.
Yeah, and that can be a real challenge.
Can be a real challenge and maybe not as effective as a movie.
Mm.
So I think it is a real shame it didn't win any big awards. Yeah. It would have deserved to win at least, you know, Best Musical. I think it would have been fantastic. It's such a good storyline as well.
Yes.
And I will sidetrack a little bit to talk about what I love so much about this movie. This musical, it very easily could have been in our satire week because it's very, very satirical.
Yes.
Of you know, the American justice system. Granted, this was back in the 1920s. It's very different now. But that idea of a celebrity criminal and the role of the media in big murder cases, the lawyer that, you know, comes to help her is all about the image. And we've got to paint this picture of you, how you were actually just an innocent girl who fell for the temptations of the big city and, you know, totally turning the public's attention to how innocent she is, you know, rather than what she did because of the media.
Yeah.
And it was actually more about, you know, the persona that she portrayed rather than the crime that she was being convicted for.
It was, yes.
Which is really interesting. Yeah. And you see that a lot with a lot of the other characters as well. You have Velma Kelly, who is a very famous showgirl and was able to sort of get away with it because of that.
Yes.
You also have a character I really like is Mama, who's the maiden of the, not the maiden, but she's like the main guard for the women's prison.
Yes.
And she's based, you know, there's a really good song, which is, you know, if you're good to mama, mama's good to you. Mm-hmm. And it's the idea of bribery, and you're only going to get what you want if you can pay up. Mm. It's very much like that as well. We see where there is a lot of bribery, there's a lot of corruption.
Yes.
People aren't really getting punished for what they did, and so on and so forth. So I think it does touch on those realistic themes today. There is a lot of corruption still, just by nature. There's a lot of sort of lie, cheat, and steal to get what you want. So I think it definitely echoed those thoughts at the time and touches on a little bit what we've got today. But I think there's a lot to be said about how much people love the fantasy of the musical. I think they can relate to Roxy Hart by having that big fantasy of performing. Yeah. I definitely do.
Yeah.
So, what I think about in the
relatable.
Car.
Relatable. Yeah, no, sorry, I think it is. Relatable. I think it is. It's part of the theatre space, is that you want this fantasy to be on stage, to just immerse yourself in a new world, a new storyline. So I think it is definitely relatable to Roxy.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So if you haven't seen the movie, at least, go and watch the movie. It's a great time. I apologize for continuing to bring it back to the movie, but I will quickly commend how well made it is. Mm. And it's you know, coming back to that really aesthetically pleasing setting, it's in the 1920s.
Yes.
And you've got, you know, the feather boas and all the beautiful costumes.
Yeah.
And you know, and the jail and everything like that, and how everything is almost made a spectacle of.
Mm.
You know, anything serious that happens, it's really all for show.
Which is
it's
good.
Really all for a laugh. So I think that's probably about it for this segment.
Let's hope it does come to Melbourne soon. But I know that a lot of amateur theatre productions do currently do Chicago. So I think Hannah and I, we have a new musical to go see, a new musical to review, and a new musical to become potentially our favourite. But until then, we're going to go to a song break, and we're going to be back with our next part of the review preview. And that was Postmodern Girl by Jeremy Messersmith. Hope you enjoyed. That was a nice soothing tone to bring back in the show. We are at the end of episode 16. How we're not done yet. Just a reminder, you are on SAS, the Screen and Stage Show, with Hannah Schauder and Nick Angus. And now it is time for our second part of the review preview. And for this one, we are going to be previewing 12th Night at the Melbourne Theatre Company. It is premiering on the 12th of November and will be going to the 5th of January next year.
Wow, it's here for a while.
Great season, and I'm really, really looking forward to it. If you don't remember, we actually covered this back in episode 3.
All the way back then.
Centuries ago when we started. No, back in episode 3 where we looked at the romantic comedy, because it does hinder on this topic very, very vividly. But yeah, I'm really excited to see what it's like. I think it's going to be a lot of fun, and it is an original William Shakespeare play. So it's going to be interesting to see whether they have a modern twist on it, whether they keep to the traditional, you know, setting clothes, which fits with the dialogue.
Mm.
How they're going to interpret it, it's going to be really, really interesting. They've got some big names in it. They've got Frank Woodley, as you know. Then they've got Christine Whelan-Brown. She's been quite a lot lately with the MTC, and also, which has been fantastic, really, really fantastic productions. And they've got a huge array of other names, as well as in the production team as well. Kate Miller-Heidke is part of the music design, which is going to be really, really interesting.
Very cool.
She actually designed the music for Muriel's Wedding, the musical.
Even that, I kind of think that could,
you know, maybe mean that there's going to be a modern twist, or whether she's going back into her classical roots, we don't know. There's
very
a lot to...
Very interesting. I've seen a few Shakespeare plays at the Arts Centre in the city here.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've seen, Romeo and Juliet, which had a bit more of a modern twist, but then ones like Macbeth stayed very true to its roots, same with Othello. So I think it will be interesting to see what route it goes down and sort of what the public wants now. I think we are sort of getting to a point where maybe we're not as inclined to stick with those sort of more traditional Shakespearean plays, but we want more of a modern twist to make it more relatable.
I think we're at that stage where we're a little bit on the fence post now, where we can kind of digest both sides, but we're leaning towards the modern take. In saying that, though,
Nothing beats a Shakespearean play, and I think there is nothing better than seeing the play and seeing the storyline and then watching it come to life.
Yes.
I think that is really exciting. It was interesting to learn about the play in episode 3.
Yeah.
I will be interested to see what it's like live and on stage? Because it sounds like a, no offense, but it sounds a little bit like a bit of a boring storyline. So, but I feel like that's just because it's on paper and you've got to actually wait to see.
Yeah, I think Shakespeare on paper compared to, or any play on paper compared to on stage, there's a massive discrepancy.
Yeah.
And that's why, you know, even studying plays at school, you kind of, you would go through and be like, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
But it's not until you saw it on stage or you experienced it on stage, which
really made
that difference.
And you're like, oh, this is why that line was written that way. Right. But it turned into blue.
Just to reiterate, this is on at the this premieres on the 12th of November. It is at the South Bank Theatre. As part of the Melbourne Theatre Company. So there is your preview. If you missed our review, we looked at Heathers the Musical by GJ Productions.
I believe that run has finished up now.
It has finished. It finished up yesterday, but it was a fantastic run, as we were talking about. If you've missed that, head back to the start of our show. And if you've missed any of our shows, head over to our Facebook page, head over to our Instagram, head over to our Twitter. You won't actually find the shows there. You'll find the link on our Facebook page to our Omni account.
Which is omnistudio.com/sass. It has all of our episodes on there from the past two seasons, and you are able to take your pick. This is going to be an interesting request, but you can listen to it live. But we'd love if you could actually download the episode so that we know how many people are tuning in each week. Because lots of people are listening, but we only get to find out how many people downloaded it. So if you could download it, then it's great, and then you've got it on the go. And that's great for us. So while you're on the internet, you can like our Facebook page where we're able to post all our links and the music that we play every week as well. So if you actually want to find out the music that we play, you can do it. And you can also see our faces so that you know who's talking.
Hello.
I think later this week we're going to put up some bios as well.
Yeah, we're hoping to.
I think it's good to reintroduce ourselves now that we're in a second season.
Yeah.
So,
but also, as I was saying before, with our Instagram and Twitter, please keep in touch. We really want to hear from you for our upcoming episodes. We've got a few more episodes left of this season. We finish just before Christmas, the week before Christmas. So if you've got a question, and even if it doesn't relate to a theme, or if you have an idea for a theme, get in touch with us, because we would love to hear from you.
Absolutely.
It should be our slogan. We would love to hear from you.
Absolutely. And I wanted to make a very quick last point in relation to Heathers. If you're sort of like, oh, I've missed that musical, that totally sucks, there are so many musicals out there. There are so many production companies doing musicals all the time. Mm. All you have to do is just go to their Facebook page and you'll see lots of musicals and plays coming up. Mm. So you're never actually out of the loop. And don't wait for us to review it. Go see it yourself and then shoot us a message and say, hey, I'd love if you could check out this musical that I saw the other week.
Yes.
It's great to support local theatre production companies.
It has just proved to us in the past week that they are as good, if not better.
Absolutely. And you can see these big stories.
Yeah.
Okay, it's on a more amateur scale, but still portrayed
really great.
Just as well. But until then, thank you all so much for tuning in today and, you know, for hopefully listening to the podcast when we put it up online. Before we go, I want to give a very, very quick shout out to a good friend of mine, Mikey Burrows, who is releasing music at the moment. It's pretty much everywhere. You'll find it under Michael Burrows, Burrow as in, you know, where the wombats live, and you'll be able to find him on iTunes, Apple Music, Spotify, everything. And to cap off the show, we're going to play his first single, Please Don't Cry.
But remember, during this week, keep up with your screen, air and stage. Keep up in touch with us, and remember,
stay sassy. We'll see you all next week.